This is K-Town. I'm going to take you through some of the most creepy, chilling, and downright terrifying experiences you've ever heard. This is the X Podcast. Listener discretion is advised. All right, welcome to the X Podcast. I'm your host, K-Town. And before we get started, I want to give some quick shout-outs for leaving some awesome ratings and reviews for us on iTunes. Now, I'm going to ask if you haven't yet, and you've been listening to us for a while, and you enjoy the shows, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. I will greatly appreciate that. It helps other people find us and lets us know that we're doing a great job. And as we know, we all like to know that we are appreciated. And I really want to thank my diehard fans for sticking with the show. We're starting to put out more editions. Hang in there. And thank you for the kind words that you send me on Facebook and by email. I do appreciate that. Now, so let's give a shout out to Doodle Mama 3 says, I like the voice. Thank you for that. And Dreamweaver 11 says, love it. And I'm the strange one, amazing but short. You still left me a 5-star review, so I appreciate that. Megan Ann says, favorite podcast. JK14MR says, first episode is very good. Loyal Listener 84 says, great podcast. And I think this one is faded, maybe. If I said it wrong, please excuse me. Voice is everything, and that you love the show. Thank you for that. And Synth Sam, you didn't give me a 5-star, but 4-star. I have to mention it because you said it was too scary. All right. And a big shout out to JDLBS11. I appreciate your 5-star rating and review. If you leave me a 5-star rating and review, I will give you a shout out. All right. Let's get on with tonight's edition. Suicide is always a terrible tragedy that hurts everyone it touches. In one way or another. Even so, some people view the end of their life as a grandiose final act and insist on making a spectacle out of it. As such, certain famous locations have a reputation of attracting a statistically unreasonable amount of suicides, and here are some of them. First, we have the Eiffel Tower. It's a masterpiece and one of the most recognizable landmarks and a symbol of both Paris and the entire country. But not all of the attention it gets is desirable. The Iron Lady has seen its share of jumpers. So many, in fact, that it is said to be the third most popular means of suicide in the entire country, right behind poison and hanging. Despite its open frame design, the tower is actually quite difficult to jump from, thanks to railings and various safety measures. Yet many are determined to succeed. Some attempt to scale the tower after it's closed from the public. Others are less considerate, jumping during business hours and landing on the roof of the packed restaurant on the second floor of the tower. The management company of the tower do everything in its power to stop jumpers, from security nets to other undisclosed safety measures. They also refuse to give statistics on the number of jumpers to the media, instead stating it's always too many. And really, can there be a better answer? Next, we have the London Underground. It's perhaps the most famous public transit system in the world. It's commonly known as the Tube, and it's been operational since the 19th century. It covers an impressive 270 stations with its 11 lines and 250 miles of track. It is also one of the most likely places in the world to witness a suicide. As the Underground is readily accessible from almost everywhere in London, its fast, heavy trains have become popular instruments of self-destruction among the more desperate city dwellers. People jump in front of oncoming trains on a weekly basis. The most popular suicide station is at King's Cross. While the northern line sees the most jumpers, they've had 145 deaths since 2001. Tube suicide is common enough that these tragedies have become just another routine annoyance for the poor underground staff. Delays caused by the jumpers are called with code names such as Passenger Action or One Under. Many stations feature drain openings and are commonly referred to as suicide pits because jumpers who fall in them have a better chance for survival. As popular as the underground method is, it is possibly the least dignified way to commit suicide in existence. It's surprisingly ineffective. Only 40% of jumpers die, and survivors will be charged with a number of misdemeanors with passive-aggressive names, such as obstruction of trains with intent. Successful jumpers, however, are not treated any better. Their mangled remains will be collected by disgruntled staff and unceremoniously stuffed in a cleaning cupboard until the authorities arrive. The Nusli Bridge. Imagine the quiet, idyllic Nusli neighborhood in Prague, the capital of the Czech Republic. It's a picturesque collection of small houses and old apartment buildings located neatly in a small valley. However, this particular paradise has a massive snake, the Nusli Bridge, a massive concrete construction that spans over the entire neighborhood, 140 feet over the streets below. The Nusli Bridge holds the county's main motorway, a viaduct, and the local subway line. Still having the local subway system cast a shadow on them is the least of the Nusli people's worries. The real trouble is the people falling on them. The ominous bridge is a notorious suicide spot, to the point that it's nicknamed Suicide Bridge by the locals. Around 300 people have jumped to their deaths since it was built around 40 years ago. The city authorities have added a chain link fence and additional safety measures, but these have done little to diminish the bridge's eerie reputation, and the people keep on jumping. Next, we go to Canada and the Prince Edward Viaduct. Canadians are notoriously jovial, except when they're playing hockey. As such, it never occurred to the builders of the Prince Edward Viaduct, a huge five-lane bridge constructed in Toronto, to include safety features in the design. The viaduct's railings were designed low to the point where people could and occasionally would climb or trip right over them, plummeting into the ground. As social pressures arose and suicides became commonplace, Prince Edward Viaduct suddenly turned into one of the main suicide hotspots in the world. At the height of this questionable phase, the viaduct suicide rate averaged one person every 22 days. To Toronto's credit, they fixed the issue with extreme prejudice. They built a suicide barrier of steel rods on a frame, incorporating it to the very design of the viaduct. The barrier is known as the Luminous Veil and has effectively stopped suicide on the structure. Next, we travel to Australia and their suicide hotspot known as the Gap. Being that it is in Australia, it automatically qualifies for being more dangerous. Located on the South Head Peninsula in eastern Sydney, the steep cliff has seen numerous suicides, including some high-profile ones over the years. The residents are well aware of the dark side of their beautiful scenery and are combating jumper activity with means such as fencing and surveillance cameras. Still, the area's best weapon against suicide was a man called Don Ritchie. Don was a World War II veteran who lived next to the most popular jumping cliffs. He had a habit of wandering over to jumpers who were bidding goodbye to the world and engaging them in conversation, often starting with a phrase, "Can I help you in some way?" Usually he could, and the suicide candidate would end up having tea at Don's house. Their will to live brought back by his sympathetic ear. Before his death in 2012, Don saved over 160 jumpers in this way and was awarded the Medal of Order of Australia for being a decent human being. People refer to Don as the Angel of the Gap. Next, we go to England and the beautiful and steep chalk white cliffs of Beachy Head. In the beautiful English county of East Sussex, it's a 531-foot drop into the sea below, and that alone puts it at the top of one of the hottest suicide spots on the planet. The site's fatal attraction inspired a book called Cliffs of Despair, A Journey to Suicide's Edge by Tom Hunt. According to Hunt, who spent 5 years researching the book, more than 500 people have died at Beachy Head since 1965, but not all have died by their own hand. Of the estimated 80 who fall to their deaths each year, around a quarter are suicide, according to local government statistics. Locals have reported a number of rock falls at Beachy Head in the past year, with several chunks of the cliff tumbling into the sea, sparking safety concerns. Numerous tourists have lost their footing and plunged to their deaths while taking photographs, and there have also been fatalities among the scores of base jumpers who flock there each year. Others have literally driven their cars right off the cliff, sometimes deliberately and sometimes accidentally. And as you can imagine, they have also been the preferred place for many murderers. In March of 1 year, the bodies of two young brothers, aged 7 and 10, were found alongside their father at the base of the cliffs near Beachy Head. Police later found the body of their mother, who had been stabbed to death at the family home in southwest London. In December of that year, a Korean student died after asking a stranger to photograph her while jumping in the air near the edge. The locals are well aware of their landmark's tendency to attract suicidal people, and such, pretty much everyone in the nearby town of Eastbourne has developed a keen eye for potential jumpers, up to and including taxi drivers and pub staff. A local organization called the Samaritans also patrols Beachy Head daily in the hopes of stopping any potential suicides. Next, we go to New York State and the Niagara Falls. When we think of people falling to their doom on Niagara Falls, we usually think of old movies and wacky characters trying to ride the falls in a barrel. However, the reality leaves little room for laughter. Up to 40 people jump to their deaths in the roaring waters of Niagara Falls every year. The area is almost impossible to secure entirely, thanks to the vast amount of potential jumping points. The only people to benefit from the tragedies are said to be the captains and crews of the Maiden of the Mist tour boats. They allegedly have a fairly lucrative side business in retrieving the bloated corpses of the jumpers. And they have plenty, with an estimated 5,000 bodies found at the foot of the falls between 1850 and 2011 alone. The Golden Gate Bridge. The panoramic Golden Gate Bridge of San Francisco is an icon of the West Coast, rivaled only by the Hollywood sign itself. As a massive construct that grants pedestrians a majestic view and free access on the deck that's 245 feet above the freezing San Francisco Bay, makes the bridge a very attractive suicide spot. The Golden Gate Bridge has been called the second most common suicide site in the world, and we'll get to number one shortly. There is an official suicide count of around 1,200, but authorities say that number may be much, much higher because not all jumpers have been witnessed. The ones that have are meticulously cataloged and sorted according to which of the bridge's 125 lampposts the jumper was nearest. Luckily, the bridge is fairly well protected It has its own highway patrol force that is able to talk roughly 80 to 90% of the jumpers out of taking the fall. A safety net that should prevent the rest of the suicides is under development, but the lack of funding has so far delayed the project. Next, we go to China and the Nanyi River Bridge. China is also known for massive constructs, and life can get very difficult there if you're one of the unlucky masses. The Nanyi Bridge is a massive 4-mile testament to both facts. It's an engineering masterpiece by any account. However, it also has a fearful reputation as the most prominent suicide spots of the Asian supernation. In fact, the Nanyi Bridge is listed as one of the most common suicide spots in the entire world, with over 2,000 suicides last count. Still, that terrifying number might be much, much higher if it wasn't for the bridge's very own watcher. His name is Mr. Chin. He's a stout man, recognizable by the baseball cap and an ever-present pair of binoculars, is the bridge's operator. He spends all of his spare time scanning the bridge from a vantage point at its south tower. Not unlike Don Ritchie at the Gap, whenever he spots a jumper, he attempts to help them both by himself and by calling backup. Sometimes he succeeds, and sometimes he fails and has to witness a horrifying death. But every single day, he's there, watching over his bridge. Mr. Chin has personally saved over 300 people from killing themselves. And next we have one of the most horrible ways to leave from here, and that's by way of Mount Marahara. Mount Marahara is a famous landmark in Japan and a staple of Japanese popular culture. It's the place where the government imprisoned Godzilla in The Return of Godzilla and played a prominent role in the original version of the movie Ring. It's also a suicide hotspot that rivals Suicide Forest. Suicide started there in 1933 when a 19-year-old Japanese schoolgirl committed suicide by jumping inside the volcano. When she leapt into the depths of the mountain, she immediately evaporated in the lava pit's hellish temperatures of up to 2200 degrees Fahrenheit. This terrifying way to die started a trend, with 944 people choosing to mimic this horrible act the following year. 804 of them were men, and 140 were women. Within 2 years, there were 350 more suicides at the volcano. And out of an irresistible curiosity of human nature, tourists would often travel to Mount Marahara only to watch people leap to their death. That's it for this edition. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes. This is K-Town, and I'll see you next time on the X Podcast.